Despite all the recent optimism about the recovery,
it turns out holiday shopping was just okay for retailers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hello from American Public Media. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, the 6th day of January. Coming up, the epic floods in Australia are getting worse. And that's going to have big economic consequences all around the world. Also, a cat fight over kitty litter.
But first, to the all-important retail sector, some of the big chains like Macy's, Target, and American Eagle disappointed investors this morning with measly results for the holiday shopping season. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial, and she's with us now from Chicago with more. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've been hearing a fair amount of good news recently. Seems like the economy is finally starting to sustain a little bit of growth in various sectors. Why didn't people spend that much money during the holiday season?
Well, there's really two factors. One, less important, is we had snowstorms on the East Coast, which kept some New Yorkers out of the stores. But more importantly, energy prices at the pump, crept up during the holiday season, and that forced consumers to make trade-offs. We saw it in November, but it was more dramatic in December, where they not only stopped buying, they were opting to buy things to fill their Christmas tree with and not going out in November. In December, they stopped buying as much to go under their tree as well.
And as we've been hearing on this show in the last few days, the energy prices aren't just going up because Americans are buying more gas.
No, actually, it's because of the commodity-hungry developing economies. And also, there's some supply shocks out there. The BP oil spill and problems and not investing enough when oil prices were lower have left supply a little shorter. So the combination of the two has left us having to pay the price and shoulder the burden of higher energy prices, something that we didn't necessarily create.
All right. And Diane, put it all together for us. Put it in context. How much should we care about this sort of weak December retail picture?
Well, it's only one piece of news, and overall the trend is in the right direction, but it really underscores how uneven and how rocky the recovery remains. We're going to see gaining momentum in the U.S. recovery, but remember, we've lowered the hurdle so low that it's not hard to clear these days.
All right. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
The White House panel investigating the Gulf of Mexico oil spills released its first chapter of that report. The report says the spill resulted from several mistakes by BP and by other companies. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from Washington.
The report tallies several sins on the BP well. Drillers took shortcuts as they prepared to bring up oil 4 miles down. That created warning signs that were not noticed. When the rig blew, a staff member pushed the emergency button to engage the last line of defense, the blowout preventer. The button failed. Commission co-chair William Riley says he learned that BP and its partners, Halliburton and Transocean, were all sinners.
This is a bigger problem than one company. It's a systemic problem, and I think needs to be addressed that way.
Another problem? Government overseers.
The government regulators have been overmatched here. They haven't had the resources, they haven't had the personnel, and they haven't had the expertise, frankly, to oversee an industry, the technology of which has just gotten beyond them.
The notion of systemic problems differs from the industry's take that BP is a lone bad apple. In fact, the oil and gas lobby wants the government to expand deep water drilling. The commission's full report is due next week. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And for more on this and its global ramifications, let's bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard, who is in London. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
What effect is this going to have in Europe and worldwide?
I think it's going to make quite a splash because the report talks about systemic failure throughout the oil industry. It's interesting. Today, a UK parliamentary inquiry has also reported. This also was triggered by the Gulf of Mexico disaster. And this report says UK regulation of offshore drilling is superior to that under which the Deepwater Horizon operated. Things were tightened up here after a natural gas rig blew up in 1988 in the North Sea, the Piper Alpha disaster. But interestingly, this UK report out today says the UK should monitor any changes now in the US regulatory regime to see if the US now establishes a new gold standard of regulation, which we should follow.
I imagine a new era of regulation wouldn't be entirely embraced by the industry. Is this going to slow offshore drilling in your part of the world?
No, I think it's most unlikely. In fact, the UK report says that there should not be a moratorium here. The North Sea is too important to the UK. It employs something like 500,000 people and provides 2/3 of the country's energy requirements.
And how is BP reacting to this report, Stephen?
Well, they issued a statement this morning acknowledging the report, saying they've already put many safety changes in place, and also noting with some satisfaction that they're not the only ones in the frame, that the report blames Transocean and Halliburton too. And that's reflected in BP shares. They were up this morning.
Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
This morning, the Los Angeles Times reports health insurer Blue Shield of California will ask for as much as a 59% jump in rates for individual policyholders in the Golden State. They blame skyrocketing healthcare costs and the new healthcare law. Meanwhile, a new report out this morning says the recession had a major impact on healthcare spending in 2009. It's a grim picture of that year, in fact, of lost health insurance and missed care. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Healthcare spending still rose in 2009, but at the lowest rate in five decades.
The recession had a profound impact.
Ann Martin is an economist with the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the report's lead author. She says, remember what was happening in 2009. People were losing their jobs and health insurance.
People stopped going to the doctors and delayed their medical care.
A big reason spending rose at all? The government paid for more care. Medicaid spending almost doubled. Austin Fracht is a health economist at Boston University. He says private sector healthcare spending will rebound in the next few years as people find new jobs with health insurance.
People want to buy health services. If they are covered for it, they're going to use more.
Fracht says there's a lot of pent-up demand for things like knee surgery, care people put off until their financial health improved. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
New Balance is about to get a run for its money. The sneaker company faces a lawsuit that claims its toning shoes don't quite do the job. The suit seeks class action status for customers who believe the shoes would help them slim down from the ankles up. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
With its attractive 20-somethings showing off their sculpted legs and glutes, this New Balance ad says it all.
Burn calories and activate muscles. The toning shoe that doesn't look like one. The
True Balance. New Balance claims the shoes push muscles to burn more calories because the rounded soles make walkers work harder to maintain balance. John Horan of Sporting Goods Intelligence says toning shoes are big sellers because women think they can walk their way to a fitter figure.
These companies do studies to prove the claims, but the question has come up whether these studies have any real scientific validity.
The American Council on Exercise recently found toning shoes don't perform as advertised. Webster University sports economist Pat Risch.
If New Balance is not able to defend its position, they potentially lose the trust of the segment of the population that were buying these shoes.
Working women aged 20 to 55 who've been willing to spend upwards of $100 for shoes they think can make them look better. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And now, Steve, to another lawsuit, a catfight of sorts. The maker of Super Scoop kitty litter is suing the maker of Fresh Step kitty litter for false advertising. The fight is all about a TV ad that shows multiple cats rejecting a litter box filled with Super Scoop in favor of the odor-eliminating magic of Fresh Step. Have you seen that commercial on TV?
I have. I have to admit.
All right. Well, the lawsuit says that it's widely understood in the scientific community that cat perception of malodor is materially different than human perception. And it also says, quote, cats do not talk.
Of course they don't.
I think that may be the first lawsuit in history that had to remind the court that cats do not talk. I feel like he's trying to say something.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, January 6th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The rains continue in Queensland, Australia, and floods that have affected some 200,000 people continue their path of destruction. For more on the economic impact, let's bring in reporter Stuart Cohen in Sydney. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, Jeremy. Nice to talk to you again.
You too. Well, we're going to get to the international ramifications of this in a minute, but first, give us the latest on the floods.
Well, the waters have peaked in the city of Rockhampton, which is the last major town in the flood's path. But now, to make matters worse, believe it or not, the rain has started falling again. Forecasters are calling for several more days of rain, which could mean fresh floods in places that have already started their cleanup. And there are also reports now of hazards from poisonous snakes and crocodiles.
Oh my
They were
God.
Flushed out of the rivers where they live by the rising floodwaters.
And Stuart, I gather the economic ramifications are going to go far beyond the borders of Australia.
Well, Australia supplies about half of the world's coking coal, which is used in the production of steel. Mark Pervin, who's the head of commodities research at the Australia-New Zealand Bank, says the floods will affect worldwide prices, but it's just too early to know exactly how much.
Well, look, it's still early days, and I think the problem we're seeing at the moment is that water levels are still rising, but this looks worse than the 2008 floods we saw a couple of years ago. Now, in terms of pricing, we've seen a mild pickup in coking coal prices and about a 10% rise in the last month. And I think, like we saw back 2 years ago, the market was a little slow to react, and then we saw quite a strong spike in prices.
And that's expected to have an effect on steel prices, which could in turn affect everything from construction to cars.
Reporter Stuart Cohen joining us from Sydney, Australia. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Global food prices hit their highest levels ever last month. That's according to the United Nations' new Food Price Index, which tracks the prices on meat and wheat and sugar around the world. The last time food prices were at record highs, we saw food riots. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
2 years ago, high food prices around the world caused tortilla riots in Mexico, rice protests in Haiti, and bread unrest in Egypt. But the UN report says food prices are actually higher today than they were then. Abdul Reza Abbasian is an economist at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. He says the situation isn't as bad as 2008 because many poorer countries have had relatively good harvests.
Take Africa, for example. East, West, Central Africa had the record or above average crops themselves.
Sugar and cooking oil have seen the biggest rise, but the real problem is wheat and corn. Wildfires in Russia led to a wheat export ban, and the floods in Australia have made the problem worse, while corn stocks are under increasing pressure because of greater support for biofuels in the US. Abbasian believes that if conditions don't improve, then prices could go even higher, and tensions could start to flare up again. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
It is summertime in the Southern Hemisphere, and Brazil, in the heart of South America, is blazing hot. And that includes the weather and business climate. An increasing number of American marketing agencies want to tap into Brazil. Andre Gustavo heads up the Brazilian office of Wieden & Kennedy, a big ad agency based in Oregon, and he's with us this morning. Hello, Andre.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. Why Brazil? The Brazilians speak Portuguese, yet the rest of Latin America, South America, of course, speak Spanish. Why not go to a Spanish-speaking country?
The obvious answer is because of the size of the market. Brazil's got 190 million people living there, so it's a huge market. Economy is stable, economy is growing, country's gaining importance in the world scenario. So I guess all of that compensates for not speaking Spanish.
Who is the Brazilian consumer? Who is that person?
The main Brazilian consumer now is somebody who is improving life. People are getting access to consumption, are getting access to brands. Since the economy is being stable, it's easier to get access to credit. So it's a new consumer that is finding out that they have access to stuff that they never imagined they could. So it's a very optimistic, eager kind of consumer.
How much of this, Andre, is due to the fact that Brazil has snatched the World Cup in 2014 and the Summer Olympics in 2016, right?
Yes, you're right. There's a great momentum for Brazil. Many companies, agencies, groups, I guess there's a lot of attention, not only for sports, but I guess also for music and for culture as a whole.
Andre Gustavo, Marketing Director for Wieden & Kennedy in Sao Paulo. Obrigado.
De nada. You're very welcome.
You're You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, the 6th day of January. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can always go to the numbers at marketplace.org.
This morning, we got another indicator on the nation's job picture when the Labor Department told us that the number of new people filing for unemployment claims rose last week. That and yesterday's good news on private sector jobs are all part of the lead up to tomorrow's big government report on December hiring.
Well, imagine that you're taking in all of this news about the jobs and the slow climb out of recession just as you're getting out of college and into the working world. This mediocre job market is all you know. Well, if you're one of those people, St. Joseph's University sociology professor Maria Kafalas would call you Generation R, the recession generation. Kafalas has been studying Gen R, and she joins us now from Philadelphia to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us who you've been following to get a sense of what you're calling Generation R.
They were born between 1980 and 1990. They're the children of the baby boomers, young people from one of the most affluent communities here in Pennsylvania. The second community is right at the median household income. And then the third neighborhood is working class neighborhood.
Education in this country has often been touted as a ticket out of the social class you're born into. After having gone through college, do you think these kids feel some kind of faith still in the education system in the country?
Working class kids said to us, listen, we're going to be the first generation of Americans to do worse than our parents. One young woman said, I just feel burned. My friends who didn't go to college, they don't have debt, and they're making more an hour than I am.
She actually wanted to have not gone to college.
She actually said, I don't even know why I spent the money. The middle class kids were saying, it's very tough. I am filled with anxiety. I can't sleep at night, but I still believe in a college degree. I'm just going to have to work harder, and it's going to take longer. And those elite kids said, is there really a recession? It's more like it's just harder for me to get a job, and they're sitting out this recession in a lot of ways.
Generation R knows what it's like to be in terrible economic times, but they probably also remember the great times of the 90s and or at least the early and mid-2000s economically. What do they think of the difference?
I think they look at, you know, the pop culture icons like Paris Hilton, and they're sort of cringing and embarrassed.
Right.
They now talk a great deal about not wasting money. Conspicuous consumption, they say, has gone out of fashion. And they don't want to be seen as, you know, throwing money around when their families are eating into their resources to keep them afloat, et cetera.
Well, Maria Kafalas, a professor of sociology at St. Joseph's University and one of the lead researchers working on the Generation R project, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And finally, Jeremy, at British pubs, you can step up to the bar and order your favorite brew in a half pint or a full pint. You've done that in your time,
yeah,
haven't you?
Of course,
over
yes.
The streets of London. Well, now pub goers will soon have another size to choose from, the schooner. Have you ever heard of the schooner?
No.
You've been to Australia, haven't you? This is big in Australia.
I've been to Australia, yeah, but I don't know if I ever got a schooner.
A schooner is about two-thirds of a pint, so it's somewhere between half and a full pint.
Huh.
The British government this week approved this new size, saying consumers should have more choices, a little more flexibility. It's only a couple of ounces we're talking about, Jeremy, but the changes are some of the most radical since the pint was introduced. Well, I'm going to ask you the question. When was the pint introduced in Great Britain?
Oh, I've got to imagine it's been around for a long, long time. I mean, we're talking, what, Oliver Cromwell days or something like that.
That's a long time.
Isn't the pint older than the Magna Carta?
I don't think so. That's going back to the 13th century. No, we're talking about 1698.
Uh-huh. Wow.
I know. You learned something new.
Well, I don't understand why you would want less beer in your glass.
Well,
why go
for
the smaller? I mean, I don't know.
It's about choice, man. It's all about choice.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go grab a schooner or maybe a pint.
That sounds like a good idea to me. A bi-coastal beer run in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.